I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 108 of Season 6 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Dana Nachman, award-winning documentary director, writer, all-around person, producer, everything else. I don't know, you just do everything on your own, don't you? Don't you, Dana?
No, not at all. I don't do editing. I don't do scoring. I don't do a lot of things. Yes. Yes.
Right. That's okay. You're the idea person. You exactly. Take the idea to the point where we get to actually see it, which is important. It's very important. Yes. All right, so minute 108 begins with George starting to talk to Nick and ends with George trying to calm things down. So yesterday we ended things with George and Clarence entering a very bustling bar, which used to be Martini's. I mean, I love in movies when they take the same set and they just redress it for a different time, a different place.
Producers like that too.
They like it because it's cheaper, you're saying?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, because you're saying that you don't have to build a new set. It's just the idea of, but, you know, you're taking the same thing and just making it look differently.
Exactly. And they most likely, I would think, do them back to back. You know, they'll shoot everything in this location, you know, in consecutive days to save money.
Okay. All right. I mean, again, as we talked a little bit yesterday, I mean, most of this movie was done on a soundstage. So, but again, you have to still have the set up on the soundstage.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to have it for a few days looking the same way, and then you move along.
Yeah. And think, you know, I always think about how hard that must be for actors, you know.
That they're doing it out of order, or that they're doing it, or that they're just being thrown into the same situation, just that it looks differently.
Yeah, I mean, just that, you know, if you think about here, he's in a much worse place. Well, actually, he was in a bad place both times. So, but, you know, sometimes they're in much different places and it you know, must be just hard to like switch your brain around. Like, where am I now? But it's part of the job, I guess.
I guess so. So George is now inside of the bar, and he just, you know, once again, Clarence is having a ball. He's got this really funny smile on his face, smirk on his face, you know, just looking around. George then turns to the bartender and goes, Hey, Nick, where's Martini? And Nick responds and goes, want a martini? No, Martini, your boss, where is he? Hey, look, I'm the boss. You want a drink or don't you? Okay, all right. Double bourbon, will you? And quick, huh? Okay.
One thing I want to notice when you said before about the smirk on Clarence's face, one thing I noticed a little bit in yesterday's scene and then going on through this whole scene is nobody in the bar is smiling. Like there's like really genuinely smiling. Like they're all like maybe some of them have a little bit of a teeny, like I wouldn't even call it a smile, like, you know, a pleasant look.
Well, they're living in Pottersville. What do you expect?
Right. And I think that was such a cool direction from Capra to all the, you know, the extras, you know, and the background people. Nobody there is smiling at all except for him.
Right.
And so I think that's a really cool, you know, like a nod to the good directing in this.
Right. To show that everyone is unhappy because George is not alive. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's just very, you know, it's down to the very person in the back.
Right.
Like you can see that everybody in there is on the same page, and it's real good.
Right. Uh-huh. And you can also see how short of a fuse he has just by the way that he's responding to George here. I mean, again, we now find out that Martini, you know, is not around. You know, I guess he wasn't able to. They never explained to us how he opened the bar. We just know how he got his house.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess without a house, he couldn't build a bar. Maybe. I don't know. Or he couldn't buy the bar.
Yeah, maybe he had to move out.
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe the idea that since he was paying for his, paying his rent on his house, rent to buy, you know, through the building and loan, so then he was able to still have enough money to still, you know, buy this bar.
Right.
So. And then Nick just gets really curt with the way that he's talking about it, because he basically says, "You want a drink or don't you? Like, we don't want you in here if you don't want to drink. Everyone's here in order to drink." You know, and then he asks,
"Business."
That's right.
Down to business.
Correct. And then he asks for a double bourbon. And he says, okay. And then he turns to Clarence and goes, what's yours? He goes, I was just thinking. It's been so long since I... And then Nick cuts him off and goes, look, mister, I'm standing here waiting for you to make up your mind. That's a good man. I was just thinking of a flaming rum punch. Now, are you a drinker at all or not?
I drink a little, not a lot.
Okay, I don't drink.
But I've never had a flaming.
I don't drink at all.
Not even wine?
Friday night I'll have a little bit of wine, but that's it. I don't drink. I don't like. I'm a non-alcohol person. I don't even like beer. I don't drink beer.
Yeah.
The idea of punch refers to both alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks that generally contain some sort of fruit or fruit juices. And it originated in India and was introduced in England in the 17th century. And, you know, as we know from movies, punch is usually served at parties, you know, in large wide bowls, which are known as punch bowls. And in the U.S., in order to... federal regulations state that the word punch needs to be used to describe commercial beverage products that do not contain fruit or fruit juice, which is really funny. Yeah, it's basically artificially flavored beverages.
Yeah,
which don't have real fruit juice or concentrate.
What's funny is sometimes they're called fruit punch. So it's actually should be called not fruit punch.
That's right. And therefore there are products that are labeled fruit punch, which have no fruit ingredients in them at all.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what a flaming rum punch is. You know, I don't know the whole idea of why
it sounds yummy.
It sounds interesting. I don't drink, but I don't know if I would really want something that's flaming. Like, do you know, Have you ever had a flaming drink?
I have not, but I'm going to Las Vegas this weekend, and so maybe I will hunt around and see if I could find one.
Okay. So a flaming drink is a cocktail or some other mixed drink that contains flammable, high-proof alcohol, which is ignited before consumption. So the alcohol may be an integral part of the drink, or it may just be floating as a thin layer across the top of the drink, and the flames are mostly for dramatic flair. But sometimes in combination with certain ingredients, the flavor of the drink is actually changed. So the flavors are enhanced.
Ooh.
And the process may impart a toasted flavor to some drinks. So you get like a toasted aftertaste.
That sounds good.
To the whole thing. Yeah.
I like
that. Now, what's really interesting is that there's a book called The First Bartender's Manual, which was published in 1862, and that contains the recipe for the first flaming cocktail. But as we're going to find out, you know, Clarence is older than that. So why would he know about a flaming rum cocktail? I mean, I don't have an answer, but it's just very strange.
Yeah, I don't know. Huh.
So, you can order a flaming Dr. Pepper?
Oh, that sounds fun. Yeah.
It's an interesting type of
thing. You should have everybody comment on your... on your episode and by who's tried it and where they got them.
So anyone out there, if you've had a flaming rum punch or some other type of flaming drink, let us know in the comments. Feel free. And so Clarence is still trying to figure out what it is that he wants to order. And he goes, nah, it's not cold enough for that. And he goes, not nearly cold enough. Wait a minute. I got it. Mulled wine. Heavy on the cinnamon and light on the cloves. Off with you, me lad, and be lively. So, do you know what mulled wine is? Have you ever heard that term before?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so what's mulled wine then?
It's like, I've had it. I feel like they make it in a pot, and they put like a bunch of spices in it, and... I think people have it around Christmas time. Maybe. Oh, and actually in Germany, don't they have that around the Christmas fests and all that?
Dana, you know your drinks. So mulled wine is...
I don't care for it. I'm not a wine drinker, so I don't really care for it. But I've been at parties where they have it.
So mulled wine is also known as spiced wine. And it's an alcoholic drink usually made with red wine with various spices and sometimes raisins. And you can serve it. Usually serve it hot or warm, and it's a traditional drink that's that people drink during the winter, especially around Christmas time, as you said. In Europe, it's served in Christmas markets, primarily in Germany, Czech Republic, Austria, Switzerland, Slovenia, Croatia, Romania, Nordics, Baltics, and Eastern France. They have non-alcoholic versions of it, and in Poland, you can get vodka spiked mulled wine as a mixer.
Oh,
if that's what you're really interested in. So basically,
you could go around the world trying it. Yeah, different
you
places.
You could. So, I mean, what I found really interesting here is basically, you know, despite the fact that Clarence is an angel, he's apparently cold.
Yeah. Well, he didn't dress very warmly.
No, but what it tells us also is that you know, he's not just there spiritually, he's also there physically, completely.
That's true.
You know,
definitely.
Yeah. And Nick doesn't like this. And Nick snaps back at him and goes, hey, look, mister, we serve hard drinks in here for men who want to get drunk fast. And we don't need any characters around to give the joint atmosphere. Is that clear? Or do I have to split your lip, slip you my left? Is that clear, or do I have to slip you my left for a convincer? And Clarence has no clue what's going on. He goes, what's he talking about?
Funny.
I mean, you'd think that, you know, someone who is the owner of a bar would act slightly better to patrons that are coming in to buy drinks.
Yeah.
You know, he is really letting, you know, both George and Clarence have it here.
Yeah, he's not.
No, not at all. You know, he just wants to be able to serve drinks and that's it. You know, which goes against everything that what, you know, movies tell us about bartenders. Bartenders are people that want to talk to you and, you know, want to listen to your sob stories and stuff like that. Not someone who's just going to, you know, get all upset and, you know, tell you, okay, I want you to buy something already, and that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Not good customer service.
No.
You know, California has really bad customer service, but not this bad.
So, in other words, you know, you don't think that Nick should work in any California establishment?
No. Wouldn't be good.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, come on, we know he's a better producer anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know. He's a better producer than actor. So why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
He's fired.
Well, he's the boss. So he, you know, it's a little difficult to fire the boss.
That's true.
Because he's the one making the decisions.
Yeah.
Slightly problematic. And then George tries to calm things down and starts going, Nick, Nick. And people have to come back tomorrow to find out what it is that George is trying to say to Nick, Nick. I don't know. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about with this minute?
No, I would just say this scene in general, which is more than just this minute, is probably like my least favorite scene of the whole movie. I thought that was funny. It's just like, it's very dark, and I think this is one of the low points, you know, not total low points, but I found myself whenever I see it like, oh, I hate this scene. So thank you for giving it to me.
Okay. but again, on the one hand, you can say that this is, you know, a scene that you don't like, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not an important scene to have in the movie.
No, not at all.
So, you know.
Agreed. It's very important.
There you go. So, you know, just because you don't like it because it's showing how bad Pottersville is.
Exactly.
And that's sort of what we want to see.
Exactly.
You know, we want to know why Pottersville is so bad. And why people, you know.
Yeah, it's a good scene that it's really showcasing what it needs to.
Exactly.
It's not a bad scene in terms of a filmmaking. It's just like when you're down in the dumps when you're watching it and you need to be pulled out.
Correct. Correct. Which we'll get to as, you know, over the weekend, maybe even beginning of next week, showing how, you know, where things are going here. With this whole thing, but I like the way that they do it. But again, Capra basically takes things to the extreme here, but it's effective. You know, he's trying to show that the fact that George isn't around to it, you know, you might look at it from the perspective that, okay, you know, is Nick going to act differently because George is not around? But it's more from the perspective that Nick is acting differently because George wasn't there to stop Potter from letting things get out of control. You know, so once Potter lets things get out of control, then possibly the true nature of people get out. Maybe Nick's problem is that he owes tons of money to Potter and, you know, needs to make sure that he's constantly, you know, making enough money in order to pay off Potter. I don't know. And if he has people that are coming into his bar that aren't going to be good patrons, then he's going to have a problem with that. You know, I think that you can look at it from that perspective.
Yeah.
And that's how this minute ends. So Dana, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No.
All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. So the idea behind this segment is that over the last 95 years, the Oscars have given us many challenges over the years. Where, you know, as movie fans, we sometimes love the decisions, sometimes hate the decisions. But the idea behind this segment is there are always movies that people will think that they were more deserving of winning Best Picture in any given year over the eventual winner. And so, you know, we want to hear what people think about that. And the only caveat is it needs to be a movie that was also nominated that year. You know, it just can't be any random movie that came out that year. You know, just because Dana made a great movie doesn't mean that we can now put it in, you know, one of those lists. And, you know, it needs to be something that was already nominated for Best Picture. But when yours are nominated for Best Documentary, you know, I'm waiting to see it. You know.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you.
All right. So why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up.
Okay, this was a fun exercise. Let's see. So number five was, hold on, from the year 2000. You know, and it's funny, in doing this exercise, I'm not saying that they're not the best. You know, you can analyze this one of two ways, I think. One, like what the best picture, like in the industry standards, or just what you liked the best. And so, I don't know, I kind of just tended to do what I liked the best, which sometimes wasn't the biggest movie. So I don't know how you approach it.
I approach it from the perspective of the movie that you personally think was more deserving. That's what, and you can use whatever you want. You know, whatever parameters you
Yeah,
want
I mean, it's
to
hard
say
to.
is why is this a better movie, you know?
Yeah. It's a little hard to go back in time, like so far in time, just to think of like you have to, you know, like this year, whatever's going to be best picture, like there's different reasons for it. You know, last year with Everything Everywhere All at Once, like it was so in the zeitgeist. And I mean, I did love a lot of the other movies as well, but I think that felt like the right movie at the right time. So it's a little hard to go way back and know, you know, what was or remember what was happening. But so for now, my number one, I mean, my number five was the year 2000. I really loved Chocolat over Gladiator. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't agree, but I really did. Number four, I did 2006. I loved Babel. I was obsessed with Babel. And I did like The Departed a lot, but I would have gone for Babel that
Okay.
year. And actually, I used to use the temp score from that movie for all of my movies for
Oh, really?
years.
Wow.
I mean, that score for temp for my movies, yeah. Okay, number three. I think I would have done Life is Beautiful over Shakespeare in Love, although I did like also Shakespeare in Love. And now in retrospect, knowing about Harvey Weinstein, I think I definitely would choose Life is Beautiful. Number two, I mean, this is a controversial one, but Good Will Hunting to me was like, is one of the best movies. I love, love, love it. Over Titanic. But Titanic is a pretty epic movie as well, but I'm gonna go with that. And then number one, I'm gonna do 2002. I very much loved The Pianist over Chicago.
All right, that is a great list. Dana, why don't you once again tell people where they can find
Sure.
you?
My website, Dana dot oh sorry, DanaNachman.com. DanaNachman.com. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, all under my name.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, Movie Around Minute. .com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.